Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Hair to Camera podcast. I'm your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
And before we get started on our episode, it will be a few days after the announcement, but this is the time I get that it would be best to talk about the new announcements from Warhammer Day that they announced, and they announced a couple special things. So they announced first a new couple of kill teams, of which I'm actually pretty interested and psyched for, because it means there's a type...
More like psyched for.
Only if it was Thousand Suns. But it's because it means there's a type of unit and abhuman that is fully making its return in the modern era of 40K. And that is the Rattlings.
Is that like a Vermintide-like thing?
No.
Okay. That's not Skaven.
No, because Skaven are rats. They are just rats.
They are the rats.
So they announced the kill team, Brutal and Cunning. And in it, there is the Rattlings kill team, which are just essentially hobbits. They're abhumans. Oh. You know, they're abhumans, but they have all of the classic hobbit characteristics. You know, they're short, stout, big feet. And more importantly, one of them comes well caffeinated. And then also, they come with a doggo.
Nice.
Yes.
Excellent.
As any Warhammer kit could. They also do have a little diorama, like, model set that they're going to come out with, which is, again, that's really just for, like, painters who want to make a diorama and stuff. But this is a cute thing still. It gives a lot of flavor because it's one of the recent Warhammer models that are not incredibly serious, you know?
Let them cook.
Yeah. And, like, you know, there's obviously still plenty of actual weaponry here, right? You can see they have plenty of rifles. This is like an anti-tank rifle, apparently. You know, they've got these, like, tripwire dynamite things, you know, but, like, also one's like an overweight ammo guy. So it's not like it's not taking itself too seriously. And so the Rattlings, little bit of lore, are traditionally guard units. They're like the Ogryn, but the opposite, right? And so they're about infiltrating. They, you know, will move around, kind of sneak their way into deployments, lay traps, you know, lay bombs, what you name it. You know, that they are also usually good marksmen because they can hide in small spaces without being seen. So I'm really happy to see them back. It'll be really cool. It'll be interesting to see if anything gets, if we get any more like literature or anything.
Where were they from originally? You say they're coming back. Like, how long ago were they?
Well, they've always originally technically in? They've you could run, I think, a number of Rattling units for I think technically they've had data sheets, but they originally, you know, the last time that they were around, they were made through metal, like pewter. So they haven't had new models in quite some time, like a number of decades.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, you're looking at decades ago since they've gotten model support. So they just kind of got forgot, you know, in the lore. Like, no, they never really showcased much, you know, in any newer books. So in like modern 40K, they just kind of weren't around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So but it's why I'm glad to see it back, because this is one of those fun old things and types of abhuman that people liked, and they seemed to have gotten rid of, or at least that was people's thought, right? Technically, we talked about it in the Votan, there was Imperial Guard units of squats, there were dwarves, because it was kind of the thing of like the, you know, that humans had some function of ogre, halfling, and dwarf. But now that Votan's around, I don't think that's happening, but we at least still have Rattlings. And then we also get new tank bustas, and so it's six orc units with just these like heavy ass axes and rocket hammer and like rocket launchers.
It's just a rocket like squeezed into a clamp.
It just is, yeah. And then two bomb squigs just literally squigs given a bomb or grenade and a fuse and sent to go and explode.
Yeah, that's literally like a bundle of dynamite just shoved into its mouth.
The last time you probably saw these in recent history is if you played Space Marine 1 recently.
I did, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. The box that they'll come in, like, because a lot of these kill team releases, they'll release both kill teams in a single box. And they'll come with terrain. This is actually, I don't know, to me this is a somewhat decent terrain because they usually cost, like the whole box costs usually like $140, which for the types of squads and then terrain that you get, it's not bad. You know, obviously 3D print your terrain if you have one because terrain's stupid expensive in general, not even just GW, but in general. Because I've like looked at other
terrain store.
I've like looked at other, you know, like other hobby, like hobby game terrain pieces, whatever. And they're less expensive than GW, but not by much. But yeah, otherwise that was the Rattling thing. But I need you now to send me the link to the actual topic of today's episode.
Drop it in Discord here.
Yeah. I gave Dylan for today's episode a task. I specifically level with everybody. I needed an episode that could be done incredibly quickly. And I gave Dylan the task of giving me a bunch of model names. I'm trying not to look at the list right now. And that I could explain, 10 specifically, that I could explain what on earth is this model? Because I wanted him to get models that raised questions. And so when I pull up a model, I'm going to ask him the question. And then from that, or I want him to ask me what his questions were, why he picked it, and then I'll explain from there whatever was his concern. So, here we go. Model number one. All right, we've got the drop pod.
We've got the drop pod.
What do you wish to know about the drop pod?
I was thinking about this all the way back when we first started talking about the Tau. We did the episode on the Tau.
Yeah.
I was really curious how this works in the sense of like what its purpose is as far as, because my assumption is like, well, if it's a drop pod, it's probably the idea is that it's a transport. It is to bring miniatures maybe onto the field. But I didn't know if it had any kind of purpose that it serves after the fact or like what its general, you know, positioning or like strategic value is on the field in general, because I look at it and I'm like, it's cool in the sense of like, oh, here's the drop pod that they, you know, they arrived in from the sky or drop ship or whatever, but then like what possible value could it serve to be on the field if that could be, if like spacing, if that space could be used for like, I don't know, an actual vehicle or like other units or something.
You know, there are many who would ask the same question about the drop pod. It is constantly, in fact, questioned of what its use really is. But it is about what you were getting at. You were pretty much on the right track. It is a transport unit. It's specifically for a function of the game called Deep Strike, where you will set a certain number of units off to the side, and then you can place them onto the board from turn two onward. Between turns two and three, somewhat depending on some rules, because if you wait too long, you actually can't place them on the board. They technically die off screen, if you will.
Interesting.
So the drop pod, though, is kind of like an assisting function. So you can put Space Marines, so like your regular, you know, Intercessor Squad, regular Space Marines that don't have Deep Strike normally, you can put them in this drop pod, and then they can come in, Deep Strike with the drop pod, and come out of the drop pod. And you might think, that sounds like it could be really useful. And that's where you think that. But it costs points to put this on the board. And it has a gun, kind of. It gets this little turrety thing. And I don't even actually know if in 10th edition that actually has a function on the data sheet.
Is that what that is? It's like a little turret sort of nested in there?
It sure looks like it. But the problem is, what you're doing is, unfortunately, you're creating... The reason it doesn't have function in the game generally now is you... are, yes, being able to maybe bring Space Marines into your opponent's side of the board, right? You can create a flank, which is great, you know, because the one rule about Deep Strike is you have to stay 9 inches away from any of your opponent's models. And it's one thing to bring things in through Deep Strike, but it's also something to use a solid amount of points and have it be not be used for on something that can't move and can't really shoot anything, at least not effectively. So it is very much a flavor piece for a Space Marine army, right? You get it because you want to use it for like a really like a narrative campaign, you know, because one of the ways to play 40K is to run like a narrative set of rules. There's one narrative rule set called Crusade. Sorry. But you could also inevitably play the normal games and create your own set that like, you know, allows for like, say like you and a group of friends, you know, you all have models and you want to create like a story and you create your own rules that determine like what makes you more likely, you know, what carries over and whatnot, like for how good or bad you're, you know, you did in your game. A lot of people like to play with those different like narrative rules. And these are, I would say good, but they're a lot of times used in those scenarios because in like a tournament, in a competitive mindset, this is a waste of points.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about was like, it has to be some sort of a flair thing because otherwise it does feel like you're kind of using up a lot of not just points but like physical space that could be taken up by something potentially more useful.
Yeah,
like it's cool. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
I'm down for the idea of just like flair based, you know, miniatures and things that are just kind of there to accentuate it, but.
Yeah, it's kind of like just spending $58 on terrain, you know?
And I'm sure people do.
Yeah, but you don't need to.
Right, fair.
All right, let's do the next model here. All right, we've talked about this. This is Mogan Ra. What do you have questions about him?
We've talked about this guy. I don't know if we want to do a twofer with the next one on the list. The thing with Mogan Ra, because I said as much when you first introduced me to him, is that Mogan Ra is cool as hell. And like seems like super cool in design, super cool in implementation of the miniature. I was curious about sort of how he also functions in combat. I guess mostly looking at his weapon, which is this kind of like scythe / rifle type thing. It was raising questions for me about range. And with a miniature like this, with these like established characters, I was curious if Mogan is meant to be a long range or an up close melee, or are they a balance? Like, are they a good balance of long range and short range combat? Because I'm at the point, of course, where I still don't fully know what that looks like on a grander scale, like what range looks like.
Right. Yes. So let me get to.
So basically, what's up with his weapon? How does that work effectively on a battlefield with a bunch of other units?
Yes, let me pull up his data sheet here quick. Let me just look up when we get into Eldari Craft Worlds. Yeah, sure, this is fine. All right. So, Mogan Ra, because I don't know his data sheet crazy well. So he has the Mogatar. So his gun has a 36-inch range, which is a decent size of the bore that you get available to you.
Yeah, that's really big. Because
generally you're looking at the board size, the long edge of the board is about 45 or 46 inches. So a very good portion of the board. So obvious and somewhat like through even just the length of its barrel, right? It's somewhat clear this is like a sniper rifle of some kind. It has 6 attacks. It only needs to roll a 2 or higher to hit. Has a decent strength score of 7. Armor pens 1 and does 2 damage per shot hit. And then it has devastating wounds, which means that when you crit, that it just goes through. You don't make any involved saves. All you do is you can do like a feel no pain, but you are just doing straight up damage to whatever. Like this is just doing straight up damage. You're not saving this. And then it also ignores cover because you get a bonus if you are in cover. And then it does have a melee characteristic. It actually gets 5 attacks at 2 up, strength 6, so still pretty good. Minus two AP, so it actually has better armor penetration and 2 damages per everything hit. It doesn't get any extra things if you use the melee portion of it. But this is also generally meant to... These are meant to be leading the Dark Reapers, which are the like heavy weapons kind of squad. So he generally is... I mean, he's definitely useful. He's a Phoenix Lord, right? Any of the Eldar Phoenix Lords are going to be useful for an army. But in terms of like how the melee thing, it's just like it's good. It's good to have when it, you know, that it's there, right? Like he has it, and the fact that he has a good melee profile is just beneficial. But like he doesn't technically want to be in melee, just mostly because him and his squad aren't going to particularly. The rest of his squad isn't going to particularly do great, especially given he has 5 wounds and a toughness of 3, which means that generally he can be hit or he can be wounded by a good number of things. You know, it's not going to take a whole lot to like punch through his armor.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's probably not going to be wanting to hang out all too much. He's not going to be wanting to hang out all too much in melee. But if you can get him, if he lives, or you can get him to attack, then I imagine, yeah, it'll be pretty good. All right, now you said we could do this. We should maybe go into the next one. So let's kind of maybe bring that into the next one. So the next one is the Death Jester, which is similar.
Harlequin Death Jester.
Yes, which is similar in the sense of the fact that it is... a sniping unit, but this is a Harlequin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Harlequin from a lore perspective that is specifically, you know, playing the role of death. You know, it is. So, you know, they are the lone sniper. They don't lead anything. They are meant to just be there to shoot from a distance. They have the melee benefit, like they get 4 melee attacks versus their three shots. His range isn't as long; he's at 24 inches, but he does get devastating wounds. But otherwise, actually, similar stat line altogether to the Magan Ross shooting. Let's see. However, he does get an ability where he can use his ability in the shooting phase. And until the end of the phase, he can either give himself the benefit of having ignores cover precision, which means that he can specifically shoot any character say if they're like leading a unit, the way mm-hmm. the game will work is you can put a character, say Magen Ra, right? And he'll lead the, you know, and he'll lead a squad. And if you attack him, you're attacking his squad. And his squads or bodyguards will take the damage first. So, you know, oh. they'll lose all of their wounds. They'll all die. And then Magen Ra is last. You don't take damage to him until the end, generally. You technically don't have to, I think, but there's no reason to do that. Your characters are always way more valuable than any troop. But precision lets you just target Magen Ra in this example, you know? You don't mm-hmm. need to go for that. And then other characters have something called lone operative, which this unit also is, which means they cannot be attached to a unit. And what that means then, well, technically they can, but you don't. Because when they're not with a unit, right, that means that they can, I mean, I'm sure some can. Don't worry about the semantics on that. Because they aren't attached to a unit, they cannot be selected as a target of a ranged attack if the attacking model was within 12 inches. So essentially, like, once you get, if you stay at this distance, if you stay at his 24 inch range, you cannot shoot at him.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah. So obviously, if you get close enough, you can start. But usually what you'll do is you'll, you know, keep him away. But yeah, other than that, what are any other extra questions, I guess, now about either of the two models?
I guess it wouldn't be about those two models. I would be curious about if the Tau, which I'm planning to play, if they have anything that is similar to that.
I guess to which? Like a sniper unit? Sniping yeah. leader, you know, well, yeah, which,
yeah, because I know the Tau in general, from what you've taught me, you know, they're very much they're already like a ranged army to begin with, like they very much sort of specialize in sort of longer range combat instead of getting up close and personal. So I'm trying to think if you had shown me any like sniper units or anything like that kind of operate alone. Sort of away from the rest of the army.
All right. So you have a couple lone operative units. You have the Ghost Keel battlesuit. It is the large stealth battlesuit, which actually was part of a Tau Christmas box that was announced today. Essentially, it's a box. So it's a bundle box. It'll be like $200-something, but the Tau one is seemingly going to have. All right, so yes, it'll have a Riptide, a Ghost Keel broadside, and a Commander. And the broadside is useful because that's like long, kind of almost like artillery. Your Riptide is the one where it's going to be like long range, big gun. Your Commander is your Commander. And then the Ghost Keel, as I just mentioned, is like the big lone op stealth mech. It, you know, will... It has two kind of beneficial things. So the first, it is Infiltrator, which means that it can be set up pretty much anywhere on the battlefield at the beginning of the game in that deployment phase. When you're setting mm-hmm. up all your models, you can put it anywhere because you have a deployment zone usually that's up to like 12-6 inches, depending on like the height of then like the portion of the battlefield or like the table you're using, because deployment gets real funky. They have some weird shapes. But with the Ghost Keel, you can put it anywhere. As long as it's 9 inches away from as long as it is horizontally 9 inches away from the enemy deployment zone and any models. Any enemy models, specifically. And then because it has stealth, it gets the benefit that each time a ranged attack is made against it, it gets one to the attack roll. Otherwise, Commander Shadow Sun is also lone operative. Runs also pretty much kind of similar as some similar aspects to the Ghost Keel. So it does have Infiltrator. It also has Stealth, but it also has a bunch of extra abilities because she's, you know, this big, awesome character. So,
right, right.
Yeah, you know, she's an epic hero, as they would also put it. And then there's just other simple ones like there's the Firesight Team, which, oh, that's right. The Firesight Team. I forgot about this for a moment. I saw a team and it threw me off. And I was like, what? The Firesight Team, which is essentially a, you know, is essentially a stealth-based unit, or not stealth, a sniper-based unit. It is one... What? You are annoying. All right. It is one unit, just a man, and he's piloting these three sniper drones.
Right.
But he's a lone operative. He has stealth. And he has infiltrate. So you can put him... You obviously aren't bringing him forward, though. It's like, what this lets you do is maybe put him high up on a terrain piece or something.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty old model. So it isn't maybe one that most people are going to look for. Otherwise, there is the Kroot Lone Spear, which is, as mentioned, a Kroot model. It's one of the new Kroot models. And, you know, he's pretty cool. He's got like his like salamander lizardy rides. He's got this big, he's got a bunch of spears that he throws. You know, it's like, and obviously he's better for melee for sure. The Kroot long gun, for example. Well, the Kroot lone spear, or no, sorry, that's the name of the character. The gun does like one attack, has a three up, it has six strength, which is decent. Minus two AP and three damage each. So it's like, all right, if you can get it, that's cool. But otherwise, you know, you get the benefit of having close combat attacks, which are kind of, they're kind of weak, but you get a lot of them. So it's like, you know, but again, he's mostly like Kroot are there to be your front line so that your Tau can keep shooting down the barrel, you know?
Right, right. Of course.
But yeah, so that's kind of what they get. So you have a good number of options in terms of what getting to like lone ops and stealth units for sure. At least especially the lone op and like sniper, I mean, that's kind of any, honestly, that's a bunch of the units. Like anything that like the any of the Riptide battle suits, I mean, there are a number, even just a number of the like fire teams. So like the like a number of them can have a good amount of range to their weapons. So and like have or like have a sniper rifle as an option for one of the model unit like models in the unit.
Mm-hmm.
So from a sniper perspective, it's kind of easy just because the army is so ranged, you know. All right, but why don't we move to the next one? See what's going on here.
Alright, who's our next?
Okay, we've got the Tidewall Shield Tau, line.
Speaking of Tau, so yeah. I gotta be real, I should have brought this up like ages and ages ago.
Yeah.
Never did. We need to address what in the world this is and how it works. Like, so my assumption is like, oh, it's cover, you know? It's like a way to have like cover within combat.
Uh-huh.
But then you've got this like circular pancake area at the top,
yeah,
that I feel like would provide zero cover at all. Like you're on a raised platform. I don't.
Well, you can see the wall goes up there. You can see the wall goes up. You can see this.
It does, but I guess I need to see here. Let me look at the images they have of the actual units. Yeah, like I don't know. Maybe this is just me being like overly pedantic about it. But it
doesn't help that the freaking ethereal's on a disc. Yeah,
yeah, they've got the ethereal up on in the air, like completely visible to fire.
Yes. Either way, really, what that it does. So the beneficial part for Warhammer 40K is, from the game perspective, the main thing matters about if your base is touching the wall to grant you cover.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as that ethereal, despite that the model itself is clearly much taller. Obviously, you can't make your models crouch. So The way they deal with that is by just having it. So as long as the base of that model will touch the wall of this thing, of this circular pad, then it is in cover. But it is just, it is, it's, this is about, this is the Tau, a Tau version, not even in, it's not technically, there is actually a version of the Tau drop pod, kind of. I mean, it's shaped just like this thing is. But actually, if, let me check something here. Yeah, no, it's this is essentially three parts to one thing. And that is, like, essentially you can eventually build the the Megazord of Tau cover.
Yeah,
here.
There we go. See, now we're cooking. Now I'm seeing the picture. I'm seeing the elements come together.
Yeah. The only downside of that is it's 85 points for the big tall part of it with the gun on it. At least that is a gun. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, or no, it's not even the one that's just a sphere. The part that's just this. Mm-hmm. Is 85 points for like moderately mobile cover. They only move 4 inches, which is slower than the unit's walking speed.
Yeah.
And then the gun one is 90 points. And then the one you're showing me is another 85. So if you got all three, you would be at 190 points.
So why am I paying $80 for this thing?
You're not! No one is. This is another just GW terrain scam.
Okay.
Sorry, legal reasons. It's not a scam. It's just not a wise investment.
It's a hustle.
Yeah, it's just not it. It's what it is it's not it.
It ain't it, Chief.
Yeah, that's a little bit of an easier one here to explain.
Okay.
All right, the Darkstrider. What is your question about the Darkstrider?
So, we were talking about drones.
Yes.
When I see figures that have, you know, little baby drones like the Darkstrider has, or they have like little animal companions or what have you,
yeah.
I am wondering about how that works. Do they... Are they considered just to be part of that unit and they don't have any kind of like special, you know, additional things going on with them? Like, does that count the same as having a drone on the field? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So, yes and no, because, now say for example, I'll go back to this list in a second. When I add, you know, a Darkstrider, you could see that sometimes you'll see like if he can or can't have his own drones. But when you look at his data sheet, what you'll see, and that was for the general Tau thing, but he doesn't have any drones, but he does have those two mini drones, and those are tied to his abilities. So those are both his structural analyzer and his jammer array. And those give him these abilities of, while this model is leading a unit, each time a model in that unit makes a ranged attack, you can add one to the wound roll. Pretty much kind of acting like he's scouting for his unit. And then you have the benefit of enemy units that are set up on the battlefield from reserves cannot be set up within 12 inches of this model. Essentially, like, giving them a blurry view of the battlefield. So instead of 9 inches, you get an extra 3 inches. And we all know 3 inches is a lot. 3 inches is a lot.
No comment.
But yeah, but it can matter in this game.
That's 1 inch less than the terrain can move.
Yes.
But also it's potentially because of terrain, maybe blocks you out almost entirely of being able to make a decent charge or be able to get in, because one of the functions of the game is to is when you deep strike, you do it at the end of a movement phase. So if you can do one of two things. So if they have to like go into an inopportune place, maybe they can't see your model anymore. So they can't shoot this unit.
Mm.
Or maybe they are able to shoot you. You shrug them off. But now, in order to get into melee range, they have to roll a 12-inch charge. And those 12 inches are based on 2d6. So you have to roll two sixes to get into melee range. Because it's not, you know, roll a charge and just move that amount. It's roll the charge. Did you make 12? No. Then you don't move at all.
Hmm.
So it just delays and it keeps you safer for longer. Because as we mentioned, they try their best to prevent people from getting into melee. So in a lot of scenarios, what you'll find and what you'll want to look for and kind of what your question was around is that in this scenario, these drones are directly attached in some function to the model, right? So in his scenario, you can kind of see they've kind of got it like attached to the plastic attached to his hand and this like piece of his armor, and not by much. So I imagine this is going to break really easily if you put it in something the wrong way or you drop it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like because these are attached directly to the model, then these are going to generally be part of the character's like data sheet. Where in the sense of like another Tau unit, that's when maybe then you'll run into, or all the drones are going to be separate models and they'll have their own like bases. They'll be like these transparent flying bases, but they're bases nonetheless. Now, they don't have their own movement or anything. They just kind of move with the unit. So you kind of are able just to kind of shove them wherever. They're essentially just like tokens in reality. They just represent an ability that has or has not been used. But okay. For him, he gets to use these abilities, so the models get to stay with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's usually, again, the rule is if it's attached to the model, it will probably have some function to it. Sometimes, you know, if it's an old model, they won't, but most of the time it'll have some function, but it'll be like an ability or a war gear. So like a piece of equipment that it owns, like a grenade or something like that, you know? All right. Next up. The Lictor. What is it about the Lictor?
Okay. So, slight spoilers for Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2, the best-selling video game based on the best-selling book series, Warhammer 40K, written by John Warhammer. I fought this thing, and it was cool. It was one of the coolest moments in the game for me.
Yeah.
But also, I think about video game mechanics, and I was thinking about like how that boss fight works, and it made me go, I wonder if the Lictor functions the same way in the tabletop. Probably not. So my question is, how does the Lictor function as an assassin type on a battlefield with a bunch of soldiers and units where in theory you would be able to see it at all times?
Yes. That goes into the stealth mechanic that we talked about earlier. So obviously, yes, you can physically see it, but it has stealth and infiltrate. But it also gets two important things. It also has lone operative, so it can't be shot at unless it's within 12 inches.
There we go.
So you want to play around that because then mm-hmm. you can make a move and then a charge to get into melee range because it only has melee attacks. But then it also, when you get into that melee range, has an ability called Fights First. And what this means is that whenever you go into the melee fight phase of your turn or your opponent's turn, you will always be the first one to make melee attacks. See, when it's your turn, you always fight first, right? Because you are initiating the fight. It's your turn.
Right.
You were given that advantage. But when the character has fights first, even if it is your opponent's turn and they come charge you and they attack you, you fight first. You do your melee attacks first. And the lictor does some damage. It gets 6 attacks. They all hit on a 2 and up. It has a strength of 7, which is pretty good, especially against like melee units. Like this against a group of Space Marines, it'll do pretty good. And then it gets AP minus 2, so you lose 2 to your saves to try to like have your armor do anything against this creature. And then each attack that hits does 2 damage. So you roll well enough, you're getting a lot of damage through. And
yeah,
that's a 2 damage, that's a whole Space Marine. And he has some decent defense. He has a toughness of 6, which is, you know, again, for like a big character, all right. He gets a save of 4, which isn't super great. But Tyranids also get a bunch of benefits when they're within synapse range of each other. So save 4 plus, a little misleading. And then it has 6 HP. But again, when it has the benefit of like all the other Tyranid units somewhat nearby, it'll get a lot of benefit to that.
Yeah.
Similarly, you can... what you can do as well is you can put this thing in reserves. So as if it's going to be going to like Deep Strike and whatnot. But... in a way, with 10th edition, at some point, anybody can kind of get a form of Deep Strike. And there's an ability in the game that you use a function called Command Points for. And there's an ability that essentially lets you spend a number of Command Points. And you can bring a unit from, like, and generally, a lot of times during your opponent's turn, you can bring a unit onto the battlefield. So you can essentially like make a block or do whatever, you know, snidely things, and you can bring them onto the field
for free.
Free? Uh-huh. See, I was doing that. Doing that Lazy Town reference.
Everyone in our audience will get it. Don't worry.
And then also every time this model does kill at a character model, you get another command point. So you get to add to your pool if you kill characters. And it does have precision. So you could bring this thing to a unit, say like a unit of Space Marines. They're being led by a sergeant or a lieutenant. They would always be led by a sergeant. In a scenario, right? Say you have a Lieutenant Titus model and he's leading a squad of intercessors. This lictor can just go up to that unit and be like, "Yo, Titus." So it can be incredibly useful. It obviously, you have to, when you're building character, when you're using character models like this, you've got to make sure obviously you're strategizing and building somewhat, you know, to the ability to support them, but it absolutely has plenty of function to how it worked in the video game, because they want the game to be relatively representative of the lore, and the way they work in the video game was very fitting to how they work in the lore. Especially even the note when Titus makes the mention about how it kind of references the fact that there's always only one lictor. Now he uses it in the sense that, like, you know, that lictors hunt alone, but that was the small nod, because everybody knows that knows the lore in the real world that there is only one Lictor. All right, let's go next here. The Winged Tyranid Prime. What about the Winged Tyranid
Prime? So we're on a Tyranid's kick right now.
Yeah. We're not getting the Tyranid model I was expecting to get questions about.
That's fair. I will say, so this was another, kind of like the drones one, or Mog and that. Like, it is a miniature that when I looked at it, it raised questions for me about mechanics in the overall game. Mm-hmm. Now, with the Tyranid Prime, the first thing I thought about is this is a winged creature that supposedly is able to cover great distances. How does that work in terms of you have a miniature, you have it on the battlefield. I'm assuming that it probably has like a speed modifier that makes it very fast. But how is there... are there separate tiers on the battlefield of like, these are your ground units, these are your air units, where they like operate independently of each other? Or even though they're technically like flying, quote unquote, are they still operating on that same level as the rest of the units?
Yeah, so they do get to lead a couple units. One of them is Gargoyles, which are the flying Tyranids that you fight in the first mission of Space Marine 2. They like cover mm-hmm. all those chains of that elevator. And this does, and they also have fly. And fly is a key word in the game. And essentially, really, the main thing that it lets you do is that it lets you kind of ignore like levels and terrain. Not entirely, but I'm keeping it simple here. Because yeah. Fly got weirdly complex recently in this edition. But the big important thing is essentially that like the way that it usually functions is that like instead of needing, say, if there's a piece of terrain that like goes kind of up a hill almost, right? Because you can have terrain in 40K where you literally will like have your model like climb up a hill or climb up, you know, like onto a, like up, climb up onto, say, like a crate. For a flying unit, that allows you to instead do it with like a direct measurement. So instead of having, say, like your normal unit, you want to climb up onto a crate. That crate is 2 inches tall. Or I think they're usually like three inches tall. So, and you're 3 inches away from that crate and you have a 6-inch move. You can get on that crate because you can move forward 3 inches and then up 3 inches and then you're on the crate. But the Winged Tyranid Prime, say now you were 4 inches away, then you'd be screwed because you need to have 4 inches in and then 3 inches up, but you have 6 inches of move. Mm-hmm. Winged Tyranid Prime and any flying creature can just measure from where they are to the top of that crate. So like it can do like a diagonal measurement and then use that to fly up to that because they're taking the direct path. They don't actually have to physically climb up the wall or the crate.
Okay.
And then it also lets you be able to kind of just go over cover a little bit easier, right? Like, so instead of maybe having to remove an 1 inch to like jump over this piece of cover that you were behind, right? Like a pipe or something, you just kind of go over it. And that's usually where fly comes into play, is that you're still always kind of generally treated as within, you know, especially a shooting range, or if you put yourself into melee range, right, where like this Winged Tyranid Prime, for example, only has a melee attack. Once you're in that melee range, you know, you're obviously not going higher. You know, there's no D&D flyby in 40K here.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a lot of movement. Just you like the mobility comes from like your ability to swing around the terrain. And that's true for any flying unit. Of which you'll have actually a number in any army. Because like jump packs and stuff like that will often be utilized with fly. Aircraft is a whole can of worms right now. If something's labeled aircraft, then it's a whole thing. But right now, fly, because of, like I mentioned, of the kind of weird, convoluted rules of recency, is aren't doing like crazy good right now. But generally, if a unit has hover, it's a little bit better. But it is what it is. That'll change. So it just is what it is right now.
Yeah.
All right. Otherwise, next up. Yes.
So speaking of drop pods from earlier, I have a larger scale question about fortification.
Yeah.
Because when I was growing up, I was playing a little game called StarCraft.
Yeah.
And in StarCraft, which it definitely did not borrow anything from Warhammer, wink, wink, it's a tactical game. It's an RTS game. And a big part of it is establishing and building out your base of operations. Mm-hmm. Not just unit control, but also building out the base. Mm-hmm. So with Warhammer, my question that the Hammerfall bunker brings to light is, how beneficial is it to quote unquote build out a base of operations on the battlefield if those are turns that could be used to attack the opponent? Is it even all that necessary? And I'm assuming that it changes depending on which army you're playing with.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really. That answer in general is no. Fortifications are kind of, they do somewhat stem from somewhat older functions of the game where they did maybe give you more benefit at a time. But for 175 points, you know, which is, you know, the cost of almost of is on over the cost of two impulsors, which are the transport units.
That's like my full battle line that we had worked out a while back. It was 175.
Yeah. So, and I mean, a squad of Space Marines, for example, is that's two Space Marine squads. Those are two intercessors. Granted, it's one group of five or of 10, if anything, but if you have them in fives, then it's two, right? So that's a lot of points for something that is never going to move. Hopes that your opponent tries to get to your back line and maybe is rolling through things that get hurt a lot by rockets. But other than that, no. A lot of 40K is actually, and you'll find this in our next episode, 40K is generally a pretty mobile game, and in mobile in terms of your units moving. It's a pretty mobile game. Like, you are not really sitting in, you will have a couple units. You always want to maybe have one or two, you know, that defends your back line. But other than that, for the most part, you really are, you know, you are really waiting around and you are getting, or not waiting around, sorry, you are moving around and you are getting objectives because the game is only won by points, and those points are very rarely related to killing things. But generally, in order to safely stay on said objectives, you do need to kill things or get them off objectives or to keep them from coming to get your objective. But everything will be centered around that. And so something that doesn't ever move is not usually helpful. And much like the drop pod, this would only necessarily come in handy when you were doing something with narrative. something where maybe this thing might hang around or be able to be used in some beneficial way in a game later where like all the games are connected to each other and there's a story being told, then maybe, right? Because you're not just spending it right for this random game, right? Where you're just specifically like just trying to win this one game and that's it. You're doing a whole narrative thing. So mm-hmm. there might be random crap that, because like, especially in like things like narrative campaigns and crusades, you'll have like a quote unquote, you know, GM, you know, and they will they will tell you things or they will set things up to create like weird interferences or this, that, and the other thing. So having something that just can sit there and not really be affected by many of those things can become useful. But again, this is like a, you get this, well, you're very much just set on every Space Marine thing you could want for your army. And then now you just want a fun painting project and cool set piece. That's kind of it.
Okay.
Otherwise, no. Dawn of War is very... Dawn of War 1 is very... And, like, StarCraft, for that matter, would be, like, very misleading for, like, playing into 40K. Dawn of War 2 is a lot closer to that, where you do have the one fortification, but that's just, like, your deployment base, and you deploy from there, and then you just send your units out to go collect the objectives. That's what the game is generally closer to. All right, we got tactical drones. What do you want to know about? So we're back
to drones again.
Yeah, what do you want to know about these lone droney boys?
The fact that they're lone droney boys. So we've already kind of addressed this in a few different ways. We've kind of like jumped around different aspects of this whole idea. But like, obviously the Tau army, they use drones a lot. It's a big feature of the army as a whole. It's a big deal. You know, we looked at... some of these other units that like sort of have drone features built in with them. My question that I originally had with this, the reason I decided to bring it in, is I was curious about the ratio of drones to actual like units, like actual military units. Realistically, what is the largest ratio of drones to working units that you could have that would still be effective? And also, on the other end of that, does playing a Tau army, is it rendered effectively useless? Or like, are you sort of cutting yourself off at the knee if you don't have a lot of physical tactical drones to use?
Right. So whenever you get a Tau box, and I'll show you what the data sheet kind of here, you will always get, they will always have stuff to let you build the drones you need. Now, say with this Pathfinder team, you'll get a special Pathfinder drone, and that's like, it looks different and all that. But, you know, and then it has different, just like essentially weapon types that make it into these specific three drones. But whenever you buy the box, right, you'll get these drones. You will have them. So this essentially, this squad, this Pathfinder team in total is getting three drones. And those three drones will be in the box. Same with this Breacher team, right? They get two drones. They will get those drones in the box. The Commander and Enforcer battlesuit will get these two drones in the box. They always come with the drones that they need to be fielded on the battlefield, and they're free. They're just a function to your, they are just a function to the abilities that are on the data sheet of your units. These drones are essentially in existence for a couple things. Maybe you lost them. Maybe you lost your drones.
Mm-hmm.
Or B, you want to satiate WYSIWYG.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because as I showcased onto the data sheet, you can have them be, you know, you, when you, you can build a gun drone, a marco drone, a shield drone, or with the Pathfinder drone, you can turn into a grab inhibitor drone, a pulse accelerator drone, or a recon drone. But that's only one drone. It can be one of these three things. And instead of trying to magnetize a drone, which is a, which would be a nightmare, or, you know, trying to... the concept, or like if you were trying to be able to have any amount of guns, marker, or shield drones as possible, or what any other drones that exist out there, these are meant to help replace those. Obviously, these won't replace a Pathfinder drone, but that's the gist. That's kind of the point I'm making, at least, is like these are meant to help. These are just a box of two drones that you can make into any of those three drones between the marker, shield, and gun drones, and that if you need to change between them to satiate your WYSIWYG needs, they're there. That's all they're for. They're, because they're just tokens now. Especially, that's the thing. There's a reason. So a lot of times in with 40K, when things get marked into online only on the website, that often means that they don't actually really intend you to necessarily buy it, or it's not necessary to really buy it as much anymore.
Okay.
So in this scenario, you can, because they're perfectly fine plastic models, but because drones are literally just tokens at this point, it doesn't really matter what is on them. You can state that your drone is whatever, and it doesn't matter, because if it's on your data sheet, you've marked it on your, you know, on your army list as they have this, you know, they have, this is a, they have two marker drones, or they have a gun and a shield drone, then that's what they are. And if you do otherwise, then you're just a dirty cheater. But people don't like that, and they like to have WYSIWYG, so this is still available to buy and whatnot, and it can satiate that. All right, and then our 10th and final model, the Phantom Titan, specifically the body, I imagine, just because it is the thing that's available. What about this Phantom Titan, do you want to know? What about this? What about this ancient piece of Forge World? Do you want to know?
I want to know what the hell is going on here. I want to know if I have conveniently forgotten what makes a Phantom Titan so gosh dang special that you're willing to pay $700+ for it. And it doesn't even come with the weapons.
Nope.
The weapons are separate.
Yep.
Look at this. Look at this lanky ass, skinny ass, landstalker looking motherfucker.
Hey, look,
with no weapons. Cockpit. And he's got a little, he's got a little Power Ranger inside of him. And they said, you should buy this or save up $50 more and get a PS5 Pro. I want to know what this guy's doing. What disease will be cured from my body as soon as this thing arrives in my mailbox?
Oh, what an amazing. So this is, I mean, you can't buy it anymore. They're just not making it anymore.
Great.
Again, somewhat similar reading into
the White
Warhammer
Whale has
website.
Been conquered.
Yeah, general reading into the Warhammer website. Unless it has come out recently, if it says temporarily out of stock,
it's never coming back in stock.
Okay.
The only exceptions are literally when something comes out, or like, you know that like this is like your store still gets these. And it is just being sold out. A good example is the Chaos Knight War Dogs. They were out of stock in America forever. They're now pretty. Now they in stock are fine. But like to not even that long ago. They were always out of stock. That was a true scenario. This is never coming back. So this is a remnant of a time long past now. This is a Forge World model. Which Forge World, I think I've mentioned this when we talked about Custodes. It was a segment, it was a GW-owned website where it was essentially kind of like these specialty creations generally made with resin, you know, this fine cast resin.
Mm-hmm.
And now, obviously, this is also going to be a very tall model. This is probably a foot long.
I was curious about the scale of it as well.
Yeah, I think they're like about a foot. Or like a foot. They're definitely below a foot and a half, I think, but like they're like right around or just above a foot. Now, why this is $780 and doesn't get the guns? Again, this is because Forge World was GW's initial way of price gouging their customers. But over the years, they realized, oh, we can just do that with our normal models by making you pay $20 for two tiny drones, even though they're in plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, they had kept Forge World up for a long time, and this was the Eldar's Titan model. You know, there are a number of Titanic units for a number of armies. You know, the orcs have the Stompa. You know, Imperium has Titans as well.
Right.
But the Eldar had this Phantom Titan, and the Dark Eldar had use to it as well. And, you know, they sure sold it. Was it any good? No, because the only way that you could ever play with them was like in 3,000 point games or special Titanic games where they were like maybe like 5,000 to 10,000 points, where you'd be putting mm-hmm. like gigantic amounts of models on the board. Where then at that point it was like, who cares? You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this. You've stumbled on a relic of a lost age.
I found the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. It is like the Ark, best left forgotten to time.
Yes. I opened it and my face melted into a skeleton.
Yeah, by looking at that price, yeah. I imagine so. I do want to look at, there's one thing that I thought I was expecting you to pull up. And that was this thing.
Oh, the Tyrannocyte.
I was very much expecting this to show up on that list. Because I was waiting for you to pull this up and just be like, what is this?
I for some reason, as I was like passing through and researching, in my mind, I thought that was something that we had already talked about.
The
Tyrannocytes when we
maybe assuredly brought up this fucking gross testicle.
Yeah.
But somewhat similarly with the other one, when we looked at Malgan Ra during the other episode, I kind of thought like maybe he forgot or something. I didn't really have any other expectations. This is just the only one where I was like, maybe. And I mean, just look at this thing. So disgusting.
It is. I mean, it's doing its job. You know, that's...
Yeah.
It meets the Tyranid body horror requirements.
Yeah. This was funny about this is that this is technically a transport unit, but it's a transport unit for just these little... Oh, website is broken. It's just a website for these like little... You know the things you shoot in Space Marine 2 where they're like the little poppers where they're like the ball floating balls and you shoot them and they explode?
Yeah, the green balls that float towards you.
They come off of this thing.
Okay. Right.
They come out of this gross ass testicle.
Yeah, I hate them.
Yeah.
I despise them. They ruined my combo.
But yeah, that's so that is those are just 10 models that raised questions. I expected a couple weirder ones, but I don't find it surprising that as a new, you know, as a prospective new player, that the large portion of your questions were around the fortification pieces of the game.
Yeah, that I was trying to go off of what I know and like other games that I've played in terms of like what are the ones that are making me question the mechanics of the game.
Right.
I knew I was going to find a few where I was just like, what is this model? Like why it do that? What that thing do? But like for the most part, I was trying to find ones where it was like Marshall might have a good explanation for like the mechanical usage of this.
Yes.
During the game.
And that is important because that what this kind of exercise was helpful for me and I think to look at and to listen to for new players was, you know, when you're just looking at the store, you're in a game shop and you're like, that looks cool. Like that's a big winged Tyranid. That looks cool. But is it good? What does it do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or like, do the wings matter? Should I worry about wings?
Right.
You know, exactly. Or like the Lictor. I saw this in Space Marine 2. You know, does it work in the game like it does in the video game? And, you know, that answer was kind of yeah. And, you know, in the Tyranid Prime, it's like, okay, well, there's a function of flying. And here's how flying works. So that's what made this kind of nice.
I will say I was considering, because by the time we got to the tactical drones, like I say, we had definitely brought up drone usage several times throughout the episode already.
Yeah.
So I was considering as like if we wanted to just kind of skip over that, I was going to ask you about the difference between, and I can send the links over to you, but the difference between the obelisk and the tesseract vault for the Necrons.
Oh dear. Okay, let me double check.
Because this
these
made
things.
Me laugh so hard when I was looking through it earlier.
Yeah, it's the obelisk and transcendent Catan.
Yeah, and then there's the tesseract vault, and I'm like, this is this is the same thing. This is literally right down to the Catan. The settler of Catan is settling in the same exact thing.
Yes.
But one of them's open and the other one is closed.
So
what is happening here?
Is essentially the Tesseract Vault is meant to utilize the Catan like within this thing, right? Like it is specifically... Mm-hmm. Yes, okay, you can see the box here. See how the box is the same?
It's the same box!
Yeah, yeah. And then again, this is... So, the Drukhari have this too, where they have the Raider. And in the website, like on the Warhammer website, you would see the Ravager and the Raider. But they're made from the same kit. They're both made from the Raider box.
Okay.
And they do this for a number of things. You know, there's a number of these types of things. And these can be nice, though, because you can get bits by doing this, which is nice. It's always in favor of them doing these types of things where one kit can build multiple things. But it's just a data sheet difference. So now, for example, what this lets you do is you have essentially a terrain fortification piece that doesn't really do much of anything. But by separating the Catan, you have a Catan unit, which... The Catan for Necrons are individually playable character units that you can put in the game. And for a long time was really important in 10th edition because Catan spam was a strategy where you'd literally play all of the Catan and just win games. It's unfortunately, I think, the only way you can get the transcendent Catan, but I think a lot of people also just, you know, they just 3D print it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a functional way to get the Catan. But I would try, if you ever really needed a transcended katan, I would try to find somebody who has it and doesn't want it anymore and just get it from them instead of buying this whole thing. Now we've, but that'll do it for this episode. So tune in next week. It's going to be a fun time. So we'll see you next time.
All right. Goodbye.